out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 10th of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, I've got a bit of a shocker to talk about today. We all know how the current Pope is turning his back on traditional teachings. We know how he has said, "Who am I to judge?" when he's asked about homosexuality. We know he's covered up for pedophiles. We know that he's a communist. We know that he's a Jesuit. And now the Pope is trying to make changes to the Lord's Prayer. And the actual changes that he is making show that he really doesn't understand what Christianity is or why temptation is there in the first place. He has apparently approved changes to the wording of the Lord's Prayer, also known as the Our Father. Instead of saying, "Lead us not into temptation," Catholics will now say, "Do not let us fall into temptation." The Pope has said that he thought the English translation of the prayer was not correct. "It is not a good translation because it speaks of a God who induces temptation," he told Italy's TV 2000 channel in 2017, per The Guardian. "I am the one who falls. It's not him pushing me into temptation to then see how I have fallen. A father doesn't do that. A father helps you to get up immediately. It is Satan who leads us into temptation. That's his department." The Lord's Prayer comes from the Gospels, in which Jesus taught his disciples the prayer. It is amongst the most sacred prayers in both Catholicism and Christianity overall, although there are other translations across denominations. So who does he think he is to change the actual words of Christ, the words that Christ used to explain to us how we were supposed to pray to God? And you think about the wording, it's actually, "Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." And what he is saying here is that it would be better to say, don't let us fall into temptation. But if we never fell into temptation, we would have no chance to show our virtue. That's the whole point of it. We have the fall. We go right back to the beginning of the Bible and we have the fall. We have the disobeying God and taking of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, which showed that we disobeyed God. So we were given another chance. We were given a chance to show our virtue, which means that we stayed alive and we had the chance at eternal life, the tree of life, which after Adam was expelled from the garden, the cherubim were placed there pointing towards the tree of life. So this whole world around us is full of temptation. And the point of that is so that we can not fall for it. We can show that we have virtue. And each time that we don't fall for the temptation, our lives improve, our spirits improve, our characters improve. And we expect to be rewarded for that in eternal life at the end of our lives in this mortal realm. That's what it's there for. For the Pope to say, "Don't let us fall into temptation." If we never fell into temptation, then we would never be able to show that we had any virtue at all. We would never grow. We would never evolve as spiritual beings. It's not saying that God leads us into it. It's praying that we don't fall for it and that we are delivered from evil by not falling for it, by showing our virtue. And we get our virtues get tempted in so many different ways. I mean, I've mentioned this before, but on the left, they will tempt our virtue, they'll tempt our altruism by suggesting that we should expand it to include these other races. We should open up our borders. We should let these other races in. We should send them foreign aid. We should do all we can to help these charities. And in doing so, we are ignoring our own people. We are ignoring our brothers and virtue signaling by helping the members of another family that are nothing whatsoever to do with us. And it also says that God helps he who helps himself. We should be helping our own poor and our own needy, not helping out another family of poor and needy that are nothing to do with us. We're told in the Bible that we should have nothing to do with these other countries and other nations. We should not be seeking their peace. We should not be seeking treaties with them. We certainly shouldn't be sending charity over there. They're never going to get any better. I mean, we have adverts on the television showing us Negroes drinking out of puddles and then telling us that if only we could send £2 a week, it would stop them from drinking out of puddles. You're never going to stop Negroes from drinking out of puddles. That's just what they do. That's just what comes naturally to them because they're not white people. You're never going to stop Negroes from eating chimpanzee meat either. Or other Negroes, for that matter. We've just had a big warning about chimpanzee meat coming into Britain and that it's full of diseases that can then spread to other humans. Yeah, imagine that, a people that would eat a chimpanzee, something that is so close to being human anyway. And I wouldn't surprise me if a lot of this stuff that they claim is chimpanzee is actually Negro meat. We've had plenty of cases of delicatessens and restaurants that have been shut down over there in Africa because they've actually been selling human meat. These are not the sort of people that we should be extending our Christian charity to. We should be extending our Christian charity, firstly, to other white Christians, and secondly, to other whites, homeless whites. And when you look out and you see these people now that are homeless. I never see any white homeless anymore. I just see non-whites with their hand out, with big issue magazines, trying to get you to hand over your cash to them, as if they haven't got a home of their own in another country. And it's just going to get worse. This is what happens when you don't extend the hand of charity to your own. You extend it to others. They will just take advantage of that. We're told that we should cast our bread upon the sea so that it comes back to us. Now, if you are casting your bread, if you're handing out your charity and you're giving it out to foreigners, it's never going to come back. It's just going to be sent back home to their own country, to their own family. If you hand that money out to your own poor, and if we didn't have any foreigners here, that money would eventually come back. That money would stay within the local economy. That money would stay within the country. This is why it says to help the poor out, because there by the grace of God go I. You could help a poor white man out, and if he's not a drunkard or a drug addict or any of these things, you know, it could help him out. He could save that money up, get himself a business, and next thing you know, he's buying things, and he's buying things from your shop, and you get that money back. If we had a closed system, if we had an ethno state, the money would just stay within our system, and the rich could help the poor. The rich were always looked upon as required to help the poor. They had noblesse oblige. They were obliged to help the poor, and they were obliged to be thankful that the poor were there to give them a chance to extend their charity to. So charity is a very important part of being a Christian, and it's a virtue. And that virtue gets misused by the devil. The temptation is to extend your virtue to these other races. That's the temptation on the left. On the right, we have another temptation. On the right, we have a temptation to get really black-pilled about things and think, well, there's no possible solution. The only solution is violence. And then you get people doing silly things like trying to shoot up a synagogue or trying to shoot up a mosque, trying to shoot up a black church. And they're doing it out of a love for their people. And they're doing it because they think that there is no other way to succeed. And again, it's their virtue that is being tempted, and it's their virtue that is being used against them. It's being misused in the same way that the left's virtue will be tempted and they will advocate for open borders. Nationalist virtue can be tempted, and the nationalist can be persuaded to go out and do something really harmful to himself and harmful to his people. He can go out and shoot up a synagogue, say. And what happens after that? Well, Donald Trump comes up with a global anti-Semitism task force. Florida come up with anti-Semitism laws. Lots of websites get shut down. And the person that did it, they're going to spend the rest of their lives in prison. They're not going to be any use to nationalists. In actual fact, all they've done is cause harm to nationalists. And the reason why they did that, they thought that they were doing a good thing. They thought that they were being virtuous by doing that. I mean, the time for those sorts of things was 4,000 years ago. The Israelites in the Old Testament, they were told to execute all the Canaanites. They were told to get rid of these Canaanites. We're told why they were told to get rid of the Canaanites as well. We're told they're race mixers, they're usurers, the pornographers, the homosexuals, the masters of temptation. And the word Canaanite also means merchant. And the Israelites didn't do as they were told. The Israelites didn't exterminate the Canaanites. They made a deal with one lot of Canaanites that they would hew their wood and fetch their water for them. Others they enslaved. And God got pretty mad at this. He said, well, I told you to destroy these people, and you haven't destroyed them. And from now on, they're going to be pricks in your sides and thorns in your eyes, and you will have to learn the art of war to defend yourself from them. And now, and you can fast forward till today, and we've got these masters of temptation that are tempting us. They're tempting us with pornography. They're tempting us with usury. They're tempting us with race mixing. They're tempting all the vices, and they're also tempting all the virtues. And the Lord's Prayer is saying that we should not fall into this temptation. We pray that God doesn't lead us into it, but we can't say that God isn't responsible for that in the first place. We can say that we're responsible for it because we ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but we were given another chance. And that other chance was that we would now have temptation put in front of us, and we could show that we had virtue by ignoring it and not falling for it and not falling for these temptations. And that's the role that the devil plays. As we know, Jesus called the Jews devils in the New Testament. And that's the role that Jews play. That's what Jews are there for. They are there to tempt us. They tempt us to get bank loans. They tempt us to fall for their celebrity culture. They tempt us to fall for gambling, materialism, a sexual lifestyle, hedonism. All these things we are tempted with. And when we don't fall for that temptation, when we show our virtue and we show our strength, our characters improve. Our spirit improves. And we show to people that we are good people, which is what a nationalist should be. A nationalist should be a shining example to those around them of the correct way to be, the correct way to live. If you live like that, others will see the way that you behave, see that you have morals, see that there are people still that won't stand for all this temptation and don't go along with all the degeneracy. And then they'll be encouraged to do the same. You know, sometimes it just takes somebody to speak up and say, well, I think this is wrong. And then that's all it needs, because then you've given other people permission to say, well, yes, so do I. I think this is wrong as well. It's not on. People lead such insular lives now, and they'll watch the television and they'll see on television that people behave in a certain way, and they'll just assume that that's the way everybody is. And you can't speak up. And they don't realize that in actual fact, 99% of everybody is actually thinking the same thing and thinking, well, this is degenerate and disgusting and we don't want this. But they're all just too frightened to speak up. Maybe people could get worried and say, well, maybe I'll be accused of hate speech or something. But, you know, it's not hate speech to say that you adhere to Christian tradition and you take your inspiration for your morality from the Bible. We're supposed to be a Christian country. They still swear on the Bible in the courts. All our law system is based on what was there in the Bible. If you can provide a biblical reference for the way that you think and the ideology that you are talking about, then I think you're covering yourself. You know, there was a clause built into the law that it's absolutely fine to criticize other religions, and it's absolutely fine to criticize and mock different sexualities. And this was put into law about 20 years back. And this new legislation, the way they try to push this hate speech legislation, they think people have forgotten about that, because the statutes that were written about hate speech, they actually contradict this. And yet this is a free speech guarantee that we have that says that we can criticize other religions. And the reason why this was actually put in there in wording in the law is because people were concerned that with the new hate speech legislation, it would prevent people from expressing their true Christian beliefs. I mean, we saw this in Austria recently. There was this rugby player who said that homosexuals are all going to hell. And he has to say that because that's what the Bible teaches him. That's what Christianity teaches him. And he has, his loyalty is to God and his loyalty is to Christianity far more than his loyalty is to the rugby team. So the rugby team sacked him, and now he's taking them to court. And I think he stands a good chance of winning. I mean, this is what the whole of Western civilization is based upon, is Christian values. As E. Michael Jones says, I believe E. Michael Jones goes a little bit too far with it. And he seems to think that if only the Negroes had Christianity and followed Christian values, they'd be able to build Christendom, which just isn't true, because they're not white people. White people built Christendom for two reasons. Number one, because they're white, and number two, because they're Christian. And you couldn't get the same civilization being built by anybody else, because anybody else would only have one of those factors. And you need both of those factors to come up with Christendom. And when you look at what the Negroes do when they get given Christianity, they just turn it into a kind of voodoo. And it was essential that we had this in order to bring our nations together. We were warring against one another before then. And Christianity helped the ancient Britons, the Welsh, and the Saxons to come together. And the Danes, once the Danes invaded. It wasn't until Alfred the Great baptized Guthrum the Viking that we could get peace in Britain. You had King Arthur going up to Scotland and fighting against the Picts and defeating the Picts. And then the Picts saying, well, hang on, don't slaughter us. We are Christian brothers just like you are. So they came to a peace. And once we had Christianity in Europe and you had these different Christian nations, they could work together into a commonwealth. It was good. And obviously they wanted to bring in the few European nations that were still not Christian yet. in Estonia and the Baltics there. So the Teutonic Knights went in there and forcibly Christianized them, which was the wrong thing to do, but the motive was good. The motive was, well, we want to bring these European brothers of ours, we want to bring them into our European Commonwealth of Christendom. And once they had joined, they had a share in the civilization, this civilization that we had, that has expanded to civilize the whole world. And it all came about through following these Christian laws, this Christian law of love your neighbor as yourself, look out for the poor, and those who are high and rich and mighty, they need to be meek. Don't be big-headed. Don't be an egotist, because what you have, you only have because God's given it to you. It's no good being big-headed about things, because it can just be taken away from you just like that. You know, we need to be thankful to God for what we have. You think about gifts that people have, people who are musicians, people who are artists. What does the Bible tell us about that? It says, well, you shouldn't hide your light under a bushel. That light was given to you by God. You should be thankful for that, and you should be sharing that among your people. And that's what creators and artisans should be doing. And then you get this Jewish idea of, instead of doing what's best for your nation, what's best for your people, it's everybody's human right to make as much profit as they can from the group around them. And this goes against everything that's natural when you think about it. Because everything that you have comes from the generations before. All the knowledge that we have comes from the generations before. You don't have a right to just take what you can. What we have is a duty. We have a duty to pay back our descendants for everything that our ancestors provided. And that's how you do it. That's how you honor your mother and your father. You marry someone who is of the same flesh and bone as you are, and you produce children, and then you look after those children in the way that your parents looked after you. That's how you repay your parents. You give them grandchildren. And the way that you repay your ancestors is you improve the world and you improve the prosperity for your descendants. And that's what nationalism is. That's what nationalism is all about. It's about putting the needs of the nation above the needs of the individual. It's just practical Christianity. This is why we say that National Socialism is all based upon Christian ideals. Putting the needs of the nation above the needs of the individual, getting rid of usury, getting rid of race mixing, getting rid of feminism, encouraging women to find their fulfillment in producing children. That's the natural role of the woman, is to get married and produce a family. And that's the only thing that will make women happy. It's not going to make them happy working for their boss, working for a husband who loves them around the home while he's out at work, and bringing home enough money so that a family can prosper. That's what makes the woman happy. And what makes the man happy? Men like to lead. We are born to lead. And every man who had a wife and a family, he was king in his own castle. He was king in his own castle, and he could lead his family with his wife there and his children following. That's the way that it's supposed to work. But the temptation has been put before these women, telling them, you should be out working, you've been oppressed being here at home all the time with these children. Don't you want to be out there doing man's things? Why would any woman want to be out there doing man's things? They're the things that are meant for men to do. They're things that men created. Women will never be as good as men at the things that men have created. Especially things like football or rugby or any of these sports, engineering, mathematics, or anything that is to do with the thing. Man's domain is the thing. It's creating things, improving things, working on objects, working on the natural world around him. That's the domain of the man. And the domain of the woman is emotions. The woman is the expert in talking to people, in socializing, bringing people together, which are all skills which are needed for holding a family together and raising children. Women are social creatures and men are creators built in the image of our Creator. And these are ways that we can tell what God is like is by looking at ourselves, because we were created in His image. And in order to show that we are worthy of being created in God's image and worthy of having eternal life, we have to show that we have virtue. It's like there's an old Indian tale about a monk, and he's celibate. He's been celibate all his life, but he's never seen a woman before in his life. So the celibacy means nothing, because he's never been tempted. And the first woman he sees, he runs off and leaves the other monks to go and be with this woman, because he's never seen a woman before. Doesn't matter how long he's been celibate for, if he's never seen a woman, then there's no virtue to that. You have to have temptation in order to have virtue. And you have to have virtue in order for there to be any worth. That's man's worth, is in his virtue. It's not in his material possessions. It's in his ability to resist temptation and to emulate the God who created us. That's where our virtue lies. That's why it says, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, in the Lord's Prayer. And you would really expect that the head of the Catholic Church would understand that and not think that they knew better than the man who gave us that prayer in the first place. It's absolutely crazy. You just don't know what the Pope is going to do next. You really don't. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I know it's been a bit of a religious one, but it just seemed important to me that I talk about these subjects today. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Arian at radioarian.com.